session number 11256, Reel 2.
Mr. Turner, Reel 2. So, where was this White House?
I've no idea actually where the White House was situated, but I know it was on the top of a hill. Air raids are increasing, and the dock area was bombed night and day. Ships were burning. HMS York had been disabled and run aground. And while on picket duty, we were approached by a man professing to be a Swedish sailor. We took him into custody and marched him to HQ for interrogation. Fires were mysteriously ignited and shots were fired, and behind us, down in the bay, clouds of thick, black, oily smoke billowed skywards.
Did you hear who this supposed Swedish seaman turned
out? No, we have a reason to believe it, that he was a German. But apart from that, our officers never passed that information to us. My story then goes on to the battle for Crete.
Can you tell me about that in detail?
As far as I can. On May the 20th, 1941, I was commanding a section of D Company, the 1st Battalion of Rangers, KRRC, in the area that we knew as the Swamp. And he was just about to stand down at 0700 hours when we perceived a full drone out over the sea. This slowly increased, and the sky was filled with Stuka bombers, Junkers, Messerschmitts, and we were subjected to intense dive bombing and machine gunning. After about half an hour, there was an uncanny silence, followed by a sighing sound above the trees. And we found out very quickly that the sound was that of troop carrier gliders coming in to land. At the same time, the sky was filling with parachutes, and as they drifted to earth, we opened fire on the troops dangling beneath them. I dispatched a runner to company headquarters, informing my commanding officer that several gliders had landed behind our company lines.
Do you think that you hit any of the people coming
down? Yes. They were sitting targets. Oh, no doubt about it. And as riflemen, we were pretty all marksmen as well. Anyway, I dispatched a runner to company headquarters, informing my commanding officer that several gliders had landed behind our company lines. The runner returned to me with orders to take my section, 8 men, to engage and prevent the occupants from advancing on company headquarters from the rear. While moving towards our target, we saw movement under a bundle of black cloth. We quickly surrounded the bundle, lifted the cloth, and to find huddled beneath it a very old lady. Her hands were clasped together and a look of abject terror on her wizened face. She kept pointing in direct direction that we were heading and muttering, "Alimand, Alimand." We pressed on, passed through a grove of olive trees, which were being used as a hospital clearing station, and we saw the results of the initial strafing, which was many badly wounded British soldiers. Using a ditch and grapevines as cover, we advanced on a small wooden hut. We quickly encircled it, and then kicked down the door and jumped inside. Sitting on the shoulder-high platform was a big man dressed in white. He had a white moustache curled at the ends. His big blue eyes stared straight at me, and it was not until I challenged him that I noticed a small under his heart and a trickle of blood that I realised he had been shot dead.
He was a Greek, was he?
He was a Greek, and I can still see him now. We continued our advance, then calamity. A machine gun opened up on our right flank, and my second in command took a burst of machine gun bullets in his chest. He died in seconds. The three gliders were now visible to us, and there was no sign of the occupants. Taking no chances, I decided to use a few hand grenades before going in. and when the dust had settled, we advanced with swords fixed to find the gliders with wings ripped off, boxes of ammunition, potato mashes, that's German hand grenades, scattered around with no sign of the enemy. Several hours later, my section, along with the rest of D Company, were withdrawn to reform on the outskirts of Hania.
Did you take any of the German arms and ammunition?
No, didn't touch anything, apart from maps. There were several maps there. And strangely enough, one of the maps I picked up was for the City of London. And why that was on the island of Crete, I will never know.
A German map?
A German map, yeah. Now I passed that down to my headquarters. Now, several hours later, my section, along with the rest of D Company, was withdrawn to reform on the outskirts of Hania. And although we were not told at the time, we were to form part of a fighting patrol and we were not expected to survive. Our packs containing greatcoats, etc., etc., AB-64s, that's our paybooks, and other personal equipment were withdrawn. Under cover of darkness, we moved into Hania. The town had been devastated. Houses still burned, and we could see and smell olive oil pouring down the streets. We proceeded in Indian file, climbing up and over the fallen masonry. Freezing every now and again as star shells lit the sky. It must have been about 0400 hours when we took our position on the ridge, taking cover behind rocks and insulated trenches that had been evacuated some time previously. It was very dark, and as it began to get light, our platoon sergeant ordered us to dispose of our small packs, mortar boxes, etc., to fix swords and to advance. This was the last I saw of the sergeant or any of my own section. We advanced into heavy mortar machine gun fire, and I must have had a charmed life. I watched as puffs of dust from machine gun bullets crept towards me, passed between my feet, and then receded again, and then I heard the order to drop back. We dropped back down into the boulder-strewn slope until we eventually reached the shore of Suda Bay, at the spot which is now the last resting place of so many of my comrades. The water was covered with flotsam and oil, and on my left, the beach hulk of HMS York. To my right, spasmodic machine gun and rifle fire. There was only one way to go, and that was to wade across. With my rifle head high above my head, I waded across, reached the other side, and headed down the road towards Suda. Some half mile along the road, I reached a roadblock manned by military police. The provost instructed me to head off and keep going until you reach the south coast.
Who were you with at this time?
On my own. All on my own. Just nobody with me. As I said, my section had just disappeared. Company sergeant had disappeared. I was all on my own.
What do you think had happened to them? Had they all been...
Well, I should think so, because the mortar fire was terribly heavy. And I've never come across any of them again. The following day, I found myself on a plateau high up in the White Mountains. No other human being in sight. And I kept thinking of my small pack, discarded on Mount St. Matthias, and the chocolate in it, and the water bottle.
What was Mount St. Matthias?
That was the place where this attack took place, where we advanced.
Who was in command of that section, by the way? Do you remember?
We were with a Sergeant Young. It was with a Sergeant Young.
And you've never seen him since?
No. As I marched on, I heard the sound of a plane. A Messerschmitt 109 lifted leisurely over the escarpment and cruised towards me. The canopy was pushed back and the plane was so low that I could almost see the gold fillings in the pilot's teeth. Again my luck held. I expected a hail of bullets. Instead, the pilot grinned and gave what appeared to be a friendly wave and then sailed on. I've had a charmed life, you know.
Did you have any food or water with you?
No. I can't remember. I tried to work out when we had our last meal, and the only thing I can think of is that when the attack started, we had some breakfast going.
Breakfast what? Going.
Whether we ever had it or not, I don't know. But that seemed to be about the last food that we ever had. It was an awful long time we went without food.
But you had your rifle and...
Oh, I had my rifle, yeah. Yeah. You'd never let go of your rifle. I pushed on until eventually I arrived at a spot where a rearguard action was being organised. I joined a party of Aussies collecting rocks to build some sort of cover. And for a couple of hours I sweated in the heat until a British officer ordered me to break off and head towards the coast, and that I would be guided to the point where evacuation was anticipated.
Did the Australians go with you or stay?
No, the Aussies stayed there. By what I could gather, they were prepared to throw stones at the Germans because we were short of ammo.
What was the attitude of the Australians?
Oh, they were quite good, yeah. Quite happy. Yeah.
Did they were quite happy to make a stand?
Oh, yes, yeah, yes. Anyway, I obeyed the last order, and I've often wondered what happened there. They'd collected quite a big pile of easily handed stones in a last-ditch stand. Several miles further on, I joined a party of 30 or 40 Swaddies and began the descent into a very deep gorge. We seemed to climb down for hours. The sky virtually disappeared. It was pitch dark at the bottom, and there was nearly a riot when somebody struck a match to light a cigarette. Then, as my eyes became more accustomed to the dark, I became aware of many bodies moving about, and an Aussie saying to me, "Here, I'll cover. Have a chunk of donkey meat." It was raw, and it was tough, but it was the first thing I'd eaten for at least 4 days, and the last for many days to come.
What did it taste like?
Shocking. Shocking. Still, it was food. I stumbled along the bottom of the gorge and eventually arrived at a very small sandy beach from which it was hoped to evacuate us.
What was the name of this place? Svarkia?
Svarkia, yes. In a cave close handy, I found a number of officers and riflemen of my own unit. Many of them were wounded. During the hours of darkness, the Royal Navy made repeated efforts to get us all out. Then information was received that May the 31st would be the last attempt. Lots were drawn among the remaining Rangers as to who should go. I drew a place but relinquished it in favour of the wounded, and I still wonder if my good deed saved my life again. Many of the ships never made it to Alex. That gorge is a Samaria gorge, and it's claimed to be one of the deepest and the narrowest in the world.
Who was organising the drawing of the lots?
Our own officers.
Did you meet any other people from your unit?
No.
In Svarkia?
No. From then on, I never saw anybody else in my old unit.
Well, what kind of units were the people at Svarkia from?
We mean from the Rangers' point of view.
The people who were at Svarkia drawing lots to be evacuated on the ships, which...
That was in my own unit, the Rangers. They were in a cave. They're in a cave at the bottom of the escarpment there.
Which companies have they come from?
Well, various companies. No, I've no idea actually which companies they came from. No idea at all. It was too chaotic.
So you must have known most of them.
I probably knew them by the faces, but anyway, early on the morning of June the 1st, we received orders to make our way to the top of the gorge and there to await the arrival of our captors. White sheets were laid out as a sign of our capitulation. The wounded were placed in the church. Despite the signs laid out, several fighter planes strafed the church and the area around us. They even wounded some of the mountain troops who were on the way to accept the surrender. At one stage, I panicked. I started to run. I don't know how far, but I suddenly realised there was nowhere to run to. I went back to the church and sat on the cliff edge and destroyed all the family photographs I had in my pockets. We watched a small boat attempt to make an escape, only to be blown to pieces by a German aircraft. The Germans made known what was required, either by gesture, using the butt of a rifle, directing submachine guns and shouting words that were unintelligible, and occasionally in English. They took a great delight in informing us, "For you, the war is over." And so we began our long trek back across the mountains, thirsty, hungry and very tired, apprehensive to what was in store for us. As we stumbled on, I noticed a small, brown, pod-like object in the dust. I recognised it as a locust bean. Quickly, I bent and scooped it up and rubbed the dust off and had a good chew. We spent that first night in an open field surrounded by German troops armed with submachine guns. And the next morning, we tried to obtain a drink of water from a well, but the guards beat us off, and perhaps it was just as well, because laying at the bottom were the bodies of some paratroops. We never know whether the guards were being bloody minded or doing us a good turn by preventing us from drinking. We continued northwards, eventually coming to a halt in the vicinity of the 7th General Hospital. I shall never forget the pervading smell of rotting and burnt human flesh, and have a very faint recollection of being issued with a tiny, watery porridge and a small piece of dry bread. I do know that I had severe stomach pains and my legs felt like jelly. And the next move was down to the docks at Suda, where we were hustled onto an Italian cargo vessel. Forced down in the hold at gunpoint, the iron sides and the bottom plates were extremely cold and very uncomfortable. We had no food, no water, and in order to carry out normal body functions, it was necessary to line up, climb up to the top of the hold, go through the process of seeking permission to cross the deck, squat on a plank hanging over the side of the ship, menaced at all times by the Italians armed with machine gun pistols. My thoughts during the voyage ranged through a possible rescue by the Royal Navy, ship being torpedoed and ending in a watery grave.
How did the Italians compare with the Germans as captors?
Worse than the Germans.
In what way?
That was shocking. Well, you ask a question and you just get the butt of a rifle. They just didn't want to know. They seemed quite happy that the fact that we were prisoners and that was it. Treated us pretty rough. But there was nothing we could do about it.
Well, the Germans were better than that, were they?
Well, the troops actually took us when we capitulated were fighting troops, and they seemed to accept the fact that we were soldiers and treated as such. It wasn't until we actually got into Germany that we began to get treated pretty rough by the Germans. And I think the worst of them were the Prussian guards. They were pretty rough.
Guarding the camps?
Yeah. Ship docked at Salonika, and then began the humiliating march along the waterfront to a prison camp close by the White Tower.
Why was it so humiliating?
Well, it was humiliating. I mean, we were hungry, we were pushed along rifle butts. Definitely, it was humiliating to me anyway. The Greek people had been forced to witness our humiliation, and some tried to hand us bread. Others gave us Churchill's famous V sign. I saw two people dragged out of the crowd. One, an old man, was forced to stand at the entrance to the barracks, his hands stretched up high above his head, and each time his arms began to drop, a guard hit him in the kidneys with the butt of his rifle. The other was a young woman, heavy with child, who was spotted throwing a piece of bread. The guards chased her. She threw her arms round a tree, shrieking as they beat her with their rifles. There was a spontaneous shout from our stumbling column, and I moved to rush the guards, but this stopped suddenly as a burst of machine gun bullets flew over our heads.
These were German guards, weren't they?
German guards. The guards in Salonika were vicious. Food and water practically non-existent. 100 of us spent our whole time in the open. No shade from the scorching sun during the day, and no shelter from the bitter cold nights. We were all lousy. We spent our days searching for the little perishes. And the first one that I found in my vest caused me to throw my vest away. I bitterly regretted it in the days to come. We were all filthy dirty, and I feel sure that one could smell us a mile away. The next move was to the marshalling yards, to be herded into cattle trucks, packed in like sardines. I think we were issued with a small piece of black bread, but I had no recollection of any drinking water. When the train started to move, we found that the truck had four square wheels. Somebody prized up a floorboard to be used as a toilet, and this space was in constant use during the time we were in transport. We all underruns, some worse than others, myself included. And it does not need much imagination to appreciate the filthy state we were in. Time after time, the train pulled into sidings to let other trains pass. On numerous occasions, we caught a glimpse of troop trains loaded with tanks, guns, and vehicles heading south. Once, we pulled into a marshalling yard, brightly lit with arc lamps, and the goons allowed us to climb down and to relieve ourselves. I have a very, very faint recollection of being handed a cup of water soup by a Red Cross worker, and then back into the cattle trunk. And my next recollection was being lifted onto a stretcher. I came to life again to find myself on a wooden bed, devoid of all clothing. And during the next few days, I watched first one Maori succumb to the dreaded dysentery, followed by another on the other side.
You mean dying?
Yes. And I learned later that the hospital was inside a cavalry barracks, prison camp 18A, in Maribor, Marburg, Yugoslavia.
Who was being kept in this POW camp?
Oh, all sorts. There are all sorts of there, Australians, New Zealanders, British, all sorts.
But all people from the fighting in Crete?
Not necessarily. I think the majority of them were from Greece and Crete. I think the majority of them were. I don't, as far as I can remember, I don't think there was anybody there from Dunkirk or any places like that.
Was it a very big camp?
Fairly big camp, yes. It was a cavalry barracks.
And did you have any contact with the Yugoslavs?
No, not at that particular stage, not in the camp itself, no.
Did you get proper treatment there?
Well, when I was eventually let out of the hospital itself, I was extremely weak. I lost an awful lot of weight. And the first thing that he did was to take me down, take a photograph, and my fingerprints. Then I was allocated a place to sleep. I was given some fresh clothing, which consisted of a pair of French trousers and a Yugoslav jacket, a pair of wooden clogs and two squares of material. Now, this material was what the Germans call Fußlappen, and they were in place of socks. They were wrapped around your feet in the place of socks. I was then told that I was going out on a working party. I kicked up a fuss. As an NGO, I'm not supposed to go out to work, not according to the Red Cross. However, I was told, right, no work, no food. So you take the easy way out. Now, we shuffled through Marburg. There was no possibility of trying to run, not in wooden clogs. And we found ourselves working at the waterworks. We were given a pick and a shovel and told to dig a trench. Well, it was freezing and the ground just solid. We just couldn't even get a pick in the ground. We made an attempt, and then eventually we went back to the camp. It must have been about four months odd. And then we got our first letters from home and our first Red Cross parcels.
Had you recovered your strength by then?
Well, it was not really. We didn't begin to get our strength back until we got our Red Cross parcels. Because bear in mind, we were feeding on potato water and cabbage, sauerkraut. Shocking. Two very tiny potatoes, probably, in some watery soup. That was the food. And then we used to share a loaf. And that would be divided into perhaps 10 or 12 pieces. Be cut up into 10 or 12 pieces.
So were you there in the summertime or the autumn?
This would be winter time. Winter time began to snow. I said, when I went out on the working party, it was snowing, it was freezing. And we had no great coats. Then, as I say, a Red Cross train pulled in and we were given our Red Cross parcels. Now, they didn't give us a full Red Cross parcel. What they did was they gave us so many tins. But when they gave them to us, they punctured them. So there was no possibility of retaining them for any length of time. There was chocolates, and there was